I was spending time with healthy people, journaling, praying, meditating, writing, being alone for the first time in my whole life. And it was a very, very painful process, but it got me to a really seeking place. You know, I sort of became a spiritual seeker, but then it became clear to me that I didn't want to just be a spiritual seeker. I wanted to be a spiritual finder. You know, I wanted to find it. I wanted to find the truth.
Hello, and thanks for joining in. I'm Jana Harmon, and you're listening to Side B Stories, where we see how skeptics flip the record of their lives. Each podcast, we listen to someone who has once been an atheist, but who became a Christian against all odds. You can also watch and listen to this and more of these stories at our Side B Stories website at www.sidebstories.com. Everyone is different. Every story is different. Everyone has and holds beliefs based on intellectual reasons, yes, but it's usually more than that. We all have good and bad experiences, influences, emotions, desires, and disappointments. We have people in our lives that shape our expectations and thinking about what we should believe to be true or good or real. We are complex and complicated, but oh, so interesting. Every story of an atheist moving from disbelief to belief is nothing short of fascinating. This huge paradigm shift occurs not merely in the mind of someone in their expressed beliefs, but it also affects an enormous transformation of life and living. After all, what we believe dramatically affects how we behave, how we see and live life, or at least it should. If not, our beliefs are essentially meaningless. But when you see a remarkable shift in someone's life, it causes us all to look more closely at what happened. One thing I can say from listening to story after story of conversion from atheism and disbelief in God to becoming followers of Jesus Christ is that an extraordinary change occurs, an exchange of life so undeniable that it captures the attention of all who have observed the before and after, so to speak. We stop in our tracks and we want to know why and how it happened. What was so profound that turned someone from resolutely walking one way to changing course to a nearly opposite way of thinking and living? Today, we're going to hear another one of those incredible stories. As an atheist, Adrian couldn't remotely conceive of God as a possible reality, much less anyone she wanted in her life. Now, she can't imagine life without him. I hope you'll come and listen to her story and be encouraged by her courage, inspired by her change of belief and life. Welcome to Side B Stories, Adrian. It's so great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. So my name is Adrian Johnson. I'm the chief of staff at PragerU, and we have a series called Stories of Us that features Americans from every walk of life and their amazing stories of transformation. We recently released an episode featuring me and my story about how I was a lifelong atheist. In fact, I was a chain-smoking, tattoo-covered, sexually promiscuous, suicidally depressed atheist that was transformed by Jesus.
Wow, you have set the stage for us, Adrian. I'm so intrigued to find out your story. Obviously, you've come a long way. Transformation is probably the right word to use for your story. So let's start at the beginning of your story. Tell me about your childhood, where you grew up, your culture, and was there God in the picture? Did your family have any beliefs? Just start us there.
Sure. So I grew up in Santa Monica, California. I grew up with two very loving secular parents. We really didn't have any religion in the home. We didn't have a whole lot of moral structure or guidelines. And my dad was basically an atheist. My mom was sort of a new age hippie. And anytime that I was exposed to any kind of religion or spirituality, I rejected it even at a very, very young age. I thought it was all make-believe and fairy tales. It didn't make sense to me. It wasn't logical. I was a very rational, logical child. In fact, when I was about 4 years old, I came to my dad and I was so earnest. And I said, "Dad, I just want you to tell me the truth. Okay. Just be honest with me. Is Santa Claus real?" And he was so taken aback by my directness that he said, "No, he's not." And I was relieved because to me, that whole thing didn't make sense. How could one person fly all over the world in one night? So even as a little four-year-old, I wanted everything to be rational and make sense. And when I heard things about Adam and Eve and Noah's Ark and the parting of the Red Sea, it just sounded like Santa Claus to me. It just sounded like fairy tales. And so I rejected it. And we really didn't have it, any kind of religion or spirituality in the home.
Did you ever talk about religion or belief with your father and his atheism? Did you have any discussion or did you just come to this conclusion on your own?
A little bit later, when I was in college, you know, high school, college, my dad and I would talk about, that was really when I started coming into my own with my intellectual, you know, thinking, and we would have philosophical discussions about history. And I remember him telling me things about The Selfish Gene, which was a book that was written by a prominent atheist. I don't know if it was Richard Dawkins or someone else yet. And he was saying how, you know, the only reason humans exist is because we're really good hosts for DNA. And that sort of sums up our entire existence. And I was a college student maybe at the time. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And I remember saying to my dad in the car, I went to college at UC Santa Barbara. And so we would drive back and forth, you know, often I would go home on the weekends and then drive back to college. And so my dad and I would spend time together in the car talking about the world and economics and politics and philosophy and all of these things that I was just starting to learn about as a young woman. And I remember saying to him once, you know, religion is something that man created back in the ancient times when we needed purpose and reason and something to make sense of the world. And now we don't need it anymore, but it's this like ancient holdover that we still have. And one day we'll be rid of it. We're just sort of in the middle transition phase right now. And I really believed that. And in fact, when I was in college, I was an adamant atheist, like an angry, cynical, hard, harsh atheist. And anytime I was exposed to religion or spirituality, I was very hostile toward it.
What do you think informed that contempt?
That's a good question. I mean, now I have sort of my own opinion about it, which is that there is so much truth and power to God and Jesus, that it is so offensive to people who don't believe. I suppose there are some atheists or some agnostics who just sort of shrug and say, "Oh, I don't really believe anything," or "I don't care what other people believe." But I know from my personal experience, it was incredibly offensive. And now I think it's sort of like when you're in the dark and you are exposed to the light and it's so harsh and blinding, it's very hard to be indifferent toward it. You know, you either can accept it or you reject it and you have to fight it because it is so offensive to your worldview and who you are. And that was how I felt.
Mm. So as you were growing up, you obviously had this very pragmatic view of life. But you observed your mother practicing some form of spirituality. What did you think that was? Or obviously she believed it, or did she talk with you about her New Age beliefs?
A little bit. I mean, I was definitely exposed to it. I definitely saw it. I don't think we discussed it that much. I was sort of more in line with my father, mm-hmm. who was, you know, very intellectual, very cerebral, mm-hmm. and we would have these discussions, but I saw my mother dabbling in all of these different sort of New Age spiritual practices, especially in Los Angeles. She would go to these different organizations, different, I guess you would call them churches, but sort of New Age versions of churches or spiritual centers. There was definitely a seeking about her my entire life that I've witnessed. She's always sort of looking for something to make her happy, make her whole, make her complete. It seems, and I didn't quite understand this as a child, but it seems to me that she's always been sort of seeking for something. And I was intrigued. You know, she would have a room in the house with her paints and her canvases when I was a child. And she also had dream catchers and rain sticks and crystals. And I was very, you know, interested in that stuff, probably just because it was my mom's, you know, it was like my mom's neat stuff, my mom's neat room that I thought was interesting, but it didn't have any meaning. It didn't have any spiritual meaning to me.
Mm. Were there, during that time as you were growing up as well, I know you're in LA, mm-hmm. so there are, especially you're young enough to have that there were some forms of Christianity around you. Did you ever have any touch points with those, any people who called themselves Christians in any kind of Orthodox sense?
I love that question because, you know, Christianity is actually such a huge part of our culture. It's very easy to be exposed to things around Christianity, and I was, and yet it never penetrated. You know, for example, I didn't really have Christians in my life. I didn't have Christian friends or Christian family. But I was very much exposed to it with things even like Christmas cartoons. You know, I loved Christmas cartoons. I loved the Charlie Brown Christmas special, Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. And in it, Linus, you know, goes on, he's quotes Luke, you know, he quotes like several verses of Luke. And I must have seen that cartoon 100 times as a child. And so I even, you know, probably had some of it memorized, but if you asked me what it meant, I would have no idea. You know, hearing terms like the Son of God, you know, died for our sins, Jesus is Savior. You know, I heard things like that because it's part of our culture, but I didn't know what any of that meant. I certainly never, ever knew that Jesus was God. No one ever said that to me, explained that to me. I thought he was a special person in the Christian faith. I didn't really understand who he was or what Son of God or Son of Man, you know, meant. But it is really interesting that you could grow up in America and even in Los Angeles and be exposed to parts of Christian culture and still never hear the gospel, never really know what it means. And that was my experience. Mm.
So as you were moving along and you were becoming this adamant atheist, I like the way that you say that, there's a certain worldview that entails. Atheism itself, atheists would say, is not a worldview, but there are certain worldview implications to that, where you're embracing, whether it be naturalism, you know, or materialism, those kind of worldviews where the natural world is all that exists, or the material world, that there is no supernatural world. Were you, as an intellectual person, aware of the implications and what those worldviews entailed in terms of meaning and purpose and value or free will or consciousness or those kinds of things that go along with embracing those kinds of ways of thinking?
I think it all made sense to me at the time. At the time, it was the most rational, cohesive worldview that I, you know, saw out there. It definitely made the most sense. And I actually found comfort in things like we are a speck of dust hurtling through an infinite, vast universe with no meaning and no purpose. There's no explanation. We don't know why we're here, how we're here. We can never know. We will never know. We can just sort of throw our hands up and say, it just is. It just is. And it's all random and there's no meaning to any of it. And somehow when I was a young person, maybe in my, you know, early 20s, that was enough for me. And it brought me some weird sense of comfort. I think it came from sort of an intellectual arrogance in a way, you know, like I really thought that I knew best and I knew more than other people. I definitely held myself above others. And I think, you know, maybe that's part of being a young 20 something. You know, I thought I knew I had it all figured out. You know, I understand. I understand the way the world works, the way the universe works, and I don't need meaning or purpose. And, you know, I thought that served me just fine, but unfortunately, it left a huge, huge void in my heart, in my life, and I was trying to fill that void with other things. Now, if you had told me that at the time, I would have said, you know, screw you. You don't know what you're talking about. And I wouldn't have believed it. But now, of course, looking back on it, I can see how that meaninglessness really affected me and left me thirsty, wanting more, and then very painfully trying to fill that void with things that could never and would never fill it.
I'd like to pause for a moment and tell you about our new Side B Stories website. Perhaps you or someone you know is questioning whether or not belief in God is even possible or credible, whether or not Christianity is worthy of belief. The trouble is, in our culture today, Christianity is viewed largely as a belief system for the weak, delusional, and uneducated. It can be extremely difficult to break through the negativity and stereotypes to explore authentic, historic Christianity. If you're a skeptic or atheist, what would it take for you to consider the reality of God or the truth of Christianity? Or if you're a Christian, how can you better understand or engage with skeptics in a meaningful way? Our new Side B Stories website was created with you in mind. In addition to housing our podcast stories, it also features short video testimonies from former atheists and resources they have recommended or written about their own journeys to belief. And you'll hear their advice to skeptics on how to pursue a search for God and advice to Christians on how to engage with those who don't believe. We offer these stories from former skeptics on the Side B Stories website because there is no bigger question that affects your life than whether or not God is real or true, good or relevant. In a culture where Christianity is sometimes viewed unworthy of belief, Side B Stories shows what it did and does take for skeptics to become believers. You can find all of this by going to our new website, sidebstories.com. We hope you'll take a look and share this wonderful resource with skeptics and Christians alike. Now back to our story. You say you have a God-shaped or God, you know, a void in your life that you were trying to fill. So in a sense that your intellectual beliefs were having an existential kind of connection to your life, the way you were living it out, you were searching because I suppose if there's a God in the picture, there is a sense of source of meaning and purpose and value and identity. But without that, on your own, did you feel a sense of kind of grappling or grasping for what is life all about? How do I make sense of life? Based upon your introduction, that it was affecting your choices?
100%. And that started at a very young age. I mean, that started at age 12. 12, 13, 14 is when I started trying. Now, I didn't realize I was trying to fill this void, but that is what I was doing because I wasn't comfortable in myself. I didn't have confidence just because I am me and I am human and I exist. You know, I needed approval and affirmation, this feeling of really wanting to be good enough and wanting to be liked and wanting to be popular and wanting to be cool. And that meant at the time being a 12, 13 year old middle school student in Southern California, that I would start drinking and smoking and doing drugs and being sexual with boys, because that's what the cool kids did. And that's how you get approval and affirmation and how you feel good about yourself and how you build confidence, is by being a cool kid. So I really went at that full force. And I enjoyed a lot of it. I had some fun, but I also really damaged myself. And I also did things that I didn't really want to do, but it was more important to appear a certain way, to look a certain way, to do certain acts, than to say things like, I don't want to do that. I don't like that. Please stop. You know, as a 13, 14 year old girl, I basically gave in to things that I didn't really want to do because I thought it would somehow, you know, benefit me or elevate my status. And it's just pretty heartbreaking to think about that, you know, that's what I was doing at such a young age, because I didn't have a better sense of self and love and acceptance. Even though I was, you know, in a loving family, my parents adored me, they gave me a lot of praise, I still was seeking and longing for something else, because the only thing that I can make sense of now is that there was something that was lacking that I was trying to fill with those other things.
Mm-hmm. So you're growing through adolescence, you get to college, you've become quite hardened against the idea of God and, I presume, organized religion and Christianity. Why don't you take us to that place and walk us forward from there?
Okay. So, you know, it's funny. I remember you bring up this memory when I was in college, and I was very much the way you describe. I was at a coffee shop, and this sweet older man started talking to me and my girlfriends. We were there, you know, studying for class or whatever. And I thought he was just so pleasant. And I was so surprised that this, you know, nice older man would just strike up a conversation and start talking to us. And then maybe about 5 or 10 minutes in, he dropped the, you know, well, I just want to tell you that, you know, Jesus loves you. And I don't remember the exact words he used, but it was basically, you know, he was being so kind and generous. And the reason he was doing that was because of Jesus, because he loves Jesus and Jesus loves him and Jesus commands him to love others. And he just wants to spread Jesus's love to us. I was livid. You could see the smoke coming out of my ears. How dare you? I didn't say this to him. I just got very cold and, you know, turned a cold shoulder, but I was so offended. You know, how dare you pull this bait and switch on me? Here you are pretending to be this nice man talking to me, and then you drop the Jesus. And I was so, so offended. You know, I wish I could somehow tell that man what has happened to me since. And, you know, maybe there was a seed that was planted there. Maybe all along the way, all along my life, there have been seeds that have been planted, even though I was, you know, very clenched and very hardened to them. You know, only God knows what those little interactions and encounters have done to me throughout my life. So God bless that man. Yes. for having that conversation with me. I wish I could tell him what's happened to me since, but college, I basically came out of college. I felt the whole way through college. I was still constantly trying to fill this void. I mostly did that through relationships, jumping from one relationship to another. I was pretty much never faithful in my relationships because my relationships couldn't satisfy me. I would get into a relationship and then it still wouldn't make me happy. So then I would need to find another person that would make me happy. If I wasn't in a relationship, I was, you know, engaged in a lot of one night stands, being sexually promiscuous, again, trying to get that attention and approval and affirmation from other people, felt good in the moment, and then, you know, would quickly wear off and not last very long. I met my ex-husband when I was, I think, 22. I was very young, and we were in graduate school and dated for a few years. We were both, we thought it was very romantic to be sort of, you know, these tortured artists who had a lot of emotions and a lot of pain and a lot of struggles. And we were very intellectual and we wrote poetry. You know, I thought that that was really beautiful and romantic at the time. And I thought that by us getting married, that, you know, that would make me happy and make me whole, even though I had been unfaithful while we were dating. And he, you know, warned me and said, if you ever do this to me again, I will leave you. I cannot let you do this to me again. And I said, I won't do it again. You know, I'd always, and at the time I would mean it. I would cry and say, you know, of course, I'm so sorry. I'll never do it again. He married me. And very shortly after our marriage, I really plunged into the depths of depression. I started struggling with depression shortly after college. I was in my early 20s when I first had my real first bout of depression, of feeling completely meaningless, wanting to end my life, needing to get help, starting to, you know, see a therapist, see a psychiatrist, get on medication. And that went on for many, many years. It would kind of ebb and flow. I would have, you know, some good periods and then bad periods. And shortly after we got married, I went into a pretty deep, dark depression where it was very hard to get out of bed on a daily basis. I couldn't really find meaning in anything. I really just wanted to end my life. I would fantasize about killing myself all the time. It was a terrible, tortured place to live in. And, you know, my poor ex-husband was right there alongside me for all of it. And I certainly was not a pleasant person to be around for all of that time. And then eventually, I couldn't stay in that place. You know, it was unsustainable being that depressed and that far gone and wanting to kill myself. So I really think I had three options at the time. One was that I could get healthy, which my ex-husband was begging me to do, which I honestly had no interest in whatsoever. Like really taking responsibility for myself and making a change and saying, I'm going to get healthy. No, thank you. The second option was to kill myself, which I really thought about doing all the time. And the third option was to act out and to blow up my life and to totally go crazy and just burn it all to the ground, which is the choice that I opted for. Mm-hmm. So I was unfaithful in my marriage. I just created a lot of chaos. It was at the time felt like needing to escape from this prison that I was in, which was really, you know, a self-imposed, self-induced prison. But so that's what I did. I was unfaithful. And my ex-husband and I had a business together. I, you know, completely blew all of that up. And my ex-husband, after many months of, you know, really trying to work things out and wanting me to get healthy, said, I told you, I can't let you do this to me anymore. And I'm leaving you. So he left me, and that's when I really, really hit rock bottom. And that was when I finally made a change.
Yes. Oh, tell us about that. It sounds like you were in a really, really hard place.
It was awful. It was, I mean, hitting rock bottom was so terrible. But the one good thing about rock bottom is that it finally got me to admit that I needed help and that I needed to do something different. I had basically been doing the same thing for many, many, many years. And even though I was in therapy for years and on medication for years, you know, I was like stuck in this cycle, and it just got progressively worse over time. Every time I was unfaithful, the stakes were higher and I caused more damage every single time. And I kept doing it with the same result. And finally, when I hit bottom, I said, I have to do something different. So I basically crawled in on my hands and knees to these meetings, these support groups for people struggling with sex and love addiction. Mm-hmm. I was incredibly ashamed. I was now, you know, approaching 30. I was going to be divorced, and I was going to these support groups for people struggling with sex and love addiction. This was not in the plan. This was not the life I was supposed to lead. And I would go into these groups and I would just sob. I would just cry the entire time. And I was so angry and so hurt and so broken. But I was also so desperate that I was willing to try basically anything. And so in these groups, they said, you have to get some kind of spiritual practice. You have to have some kind of higher power. I don't care what it is. Doesn't matter. Try a bunch of different stuff. Try New Age stuff, try Buddhist stuff, try Jewish stuff, try Christian stuff, whatever, you know. And so I did, as uncomfortable as it made me. I mean, you're telling an atheist to, you know, pray to a God that she doesn't believe in. This is ridiculous.
Right.
But fine, you know, I'll just do whatever you tell me. So when I first started praying, I couldn't even pray out loud. It was so embarrassing. Even when I was alone in my apartment or in my car, I would turn all hot and red and I couldn't bring myself to say anything out loud. And then finally, I started, at the direction of my mentor, I started saying, this is stupid and there's no one here and I'm only talking to myself and I'm doing this just because I was told to. And that is how my prayer life began.
Wow.
That's how I started praying.
Wow.
My prayer life now is really different, but that was, you know,
That was honest.
How it started. Yeah, it was very honest. That was honest.
Yes.
So for months, I was going to these groups and I was trying all this different spiritual stuff. I would try basically anything and everything that was presented to me. Now, being in Los Angeles, there was a lot of New Age type stuff that I tried. I went to, you know, some churches with some friends. I went to synagogue. I tried Kundalini yoga. I tried Buddhist chanting. I tried Sufi healings. I was basically open, you know, to anything and everything. And the more I did this God stuff, the more I saw it having a positive effect on me. It was very uncomfortable to go through it, but I could see that it was starting to affect me. I was still in a great deal of pain. I was still crying, you know, on a daily basis. But for the first time in my life, I wasn't acting out. I wasn't doing the unhealthy behavior that I had done for so many years. I was doing something different. I was spending time with healthy people, journaling, praying, meditating, writing, being alone for the first time in my whole life. And it was a very, very painful process. But it got me to a really seeking place. You know, I sort of became a spiritual seeker, but then it became clear to me that I didn't want to just be a spiritual seeker. I wanted to be a spiritual finder. You know, I wanted to find it. I wanted to find the truth. And it was after going through that whole experience, you know, the timing was just amazing, that a friend of mine invited me to a play of The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. And I had never heard of it. I didn't know what it was, but I loved theater. And I just thought it would be a fun thing to do with my friend. So I said, sure, I'll go with you to see this play. And so we go, and it completely, completely changed my life.
Yeah, that's a powerful production of Max McLean. It's a very sobering production. Can you, for the listeners, can you tell what The Screwtape Letters is? Tell us what that is and what the play is based on.
Yeah. So I go to the theater and I open the program to see, oh, what is this play about? And it says, you know, who the characters are. And it says God and the devil. And I was like, what? Like, what is this play? What am I about to watch? And it turns out that it's essentially this production with Max McLean that was put on by Fellowship for Performing Arts. It's like a 90-minute monologue, essentially, where Max McLean plays Screwtape. Screwtape is sort of a high-ranking demon official in the underworld. And throughout the play, he's writing letters to his apprentice, to his nephew named Wormwood, who's sort of a junior demon. And he's teaching Wormwood, this junior demon, how to be a proper demon and how to properly torment his patient, which is a human. And so the book and the play is sort of that idea of that you see in popular culture when there's like a little angel on your shoulder and a little devil on your shoulder. It's like, oh, that's a real thing. the whole concept of, you know, these little devils do exist, and they do torment you, and they do plant, you know, lies and deceptions into your thinking. And so the whole play is really about spiritual warfare, spiritual attack, about these dark forces that want to keep us hurting, doubting, alone, separated from God, and even comfortable. They want to keep us comfortable and separated from God, right? And so I'm watching this play, and it's like, you know, watching a mirror. I mean, some of the things that Screwtape is saying about how the demons torment the patient is just, it's what I had been living for so many years, for so long. It felt so true. It just resonated so deeply within me. And for the first time in my life, this thought occurred to me. And I always saw myself as, you know, messed up, you know, like there's something wrong with me. Like I'm just, you know, I'm tortured and I'm this and I'm that. And it was the very first time in my life that it occurred to me, maybe that's not me. Maybe there is a dark force that is doing that to me. And that's not actually who I am, you know, and that God actually wants me to be pure and happy, like truly connected to him and full of joy. And there's this dark force that doesn't want that for me. And it just really blew my mind and opened up my eyes, especially after I had been on this year-long spiritual journey of trying all these different things. And then I see this play, it just completely shattered me. Now, considering Christianity as an atheist was, you know, ridiculous and extremely uncomfortable, but I just kept putting one foot in front of the other, as I had been doing for an entire year, sort of just taking the next right action and doing the next right thing. I actually ended up reaching out to Fellowship for the Performing Arts to let them know what an effect they had on me. And Max McLean himself said that he was so moved by my reaching out to them. And he actually even became a spiritual mentor of mine because of this whole interaction.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, Max is absolutely fantastic. And he has literally watched me transform from, you know, being a very broken, not even a Christian. I mean, when I first started talking to him, I was still just, you know, a seeker. I was still just sort of like curious and interested and, you know, still very, very broken and hurting. And then God was so amazing in this time because he kept putting person after person in front of me. You know, my friend who took me to the play, you know, she actually was somebody who had not been a Christian, who then became Christian and then actually became Catholic. And so I said, that's crazy. That's a crazy story. Can I talk to you about that sometime? And I went over to her house and we ordered Thai food and we stayed up until 1 a.m. talking about Jesus, and I was crawling out of my skin, and it made me incredibly uncomfortable, but there was something about it that felt right. It felt like truth. It felt like a bell ringing within me, like I was being like covered in water, you know what I mean? And then she introduced me to someone else. And then God just kept putting all these people in front of me. And every time I talked to someone, I went to coffee with someone, I read this book, you know, it was like God was wooing me, you know, he was pulling me lovingly, gently closer and closer to himself. And I just kept exploring Christianity. And one morning I was getting ready for work. This is probably now a few months in to exploring Christianity. And this thought occurred to me. I was listening to Christian worship music, you know, getting ready for work. And this thought occurred to me that if somebody asked me, are you a Christian? I would have to say yes at this point. You know, it wasn't just like a moment. It wasn't like a white light, like road to Damascus moment for me. It was a gradual transition, and I became a Christian. And after that, I found a church that became, you know, my home church. I got baptized, and that is the church where I met my husband, my current husband, my new husband, who's also a Christian and who loves Jesus more than he loves me.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break for a moment from our story so that I can tell you about the C.S. Lewis Institute Fellows Program. This program is a 12-month discipleship course that focuses on monthly themes related to theology, spiritual formation, and apologetics. Through the structure of a strong curriculum, like-minded community, and a one-on-one mentorship, our fellows encounter a life-changing experience that develops them to grow deeper in their faith as disciples of Christ. The C.S. Lewis Institute is now accepting applications for this fellows program. It is offered in 15 different cities and is for Christians who are seeking to broaden their Christian education and deepen their personal faith. To learn more and to find out if you live in a city where the fellows program is offered, please visit www.cslewisinstitute.org. Now, we'll return to our story. That's an amazing transformation, and all started with the Screwtape letters. Of course, C.S. Lewis himself was a former atheist, so he, yes, in writing that narrative, understands the struggle, not only in becoming a Christian, but also in the Christian life. Still, there's struggle. But through that process, as you said, you talk about you were exploring, you were reading books, and I presume that you opened the Bible maybe for the first time.
Yes.
As a former atheist who probably had never even been exposed to the Bible, what were your thoughts when you started reading it? As an atheist, what did you think the Bible was? And then I'm curious the perspective of when you actually opened it and read it for yourself the first time or thereafter.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I certainly did not read the Bible before then. I, you know, had no interest in reading the Bible. After I saw the Screwtape letters and God kept putting all these different people in my path, one of the people he put in my path was a pastor psychologist who was in Chicago, who very, very graciously offered to talk to me, sort of counsel me once a week if I wanted to. And my initial reaction when that was offered to me, it was offered by my friend who took me to the play. I said, I really wanted to say, no, that's okay. You know, like, no, thanks. I'm not interested in talking to a pastor once a week. But it was so clear that it was one of those next right actions that God put in front of me that I just had to say yes to. I said, okay, I will talk to this pastor once a week on the phone. And so I started talking with him. He was a wonderful, wonderful mentor, a wonderful guide. And he said to me, why don't we start by reading the Bible? Why don't you start by reading the Gospel of John? And just take your time and, you know, read through it. And, you know, whenever questions come up or things you want to talk about, we'll just talk about it on the phone once a week. And so that's what I did. I had a drive. I was driving from Los Angeles to Sacramento to go stay with a friend for the weekend. And I decided to listen to the audio version of the Bible read by Max McLean. And so I listened to Max in my car read to me the Gospel of John. And it was I still remember the experience completely to this day. It was, I was alone, you know, the sun is shining And it's that same feeling of like just being washed with water, like this bell ringing inside of me. There's something about this truth. It's just resonating. It just feels so right and so true. And in fact, once I got all the way through it, I was so thirsty for more. And at the time I didn't know there were, you know, Bible apps and like different things. So I'm like driving and trying to find, I need to find more Bible that I can listen to in the car. I'm like frantically scrolling on my phone while also driving, which was not a great idea, but it was like, I was so thirsty. It's like, I listened to the Gospel of John and then I just wanted more. I just wanted to consume more of the Bible. And I had a very interesting experience this entire spiritual journey of simultaneously going through what I was going through and then also watching myself in total disbelief. You know, I cannot believe this is who I am. I still feel like this on almost a daily basis. Like I pinch myself, like I look at my husband and I'm like, who are you? How did this happen? How is it that I'm a Christian? How is it that I have these two children with you? Like, how did this life even happen? It's just so mind-blowing to be called to goodness and truth and then still have that very dear former self, you know, part of me that sort of judges all of it and questions all of it and is a skeptic about all of it. It's a really amazing dichotomy that I get to live out on a daily basis.
Oh, I'm sure. And I bet there are some people listening who are saying, yeah, you are a rational, intellectual, skeptical person. So you mentioned that you had been reading some books. I wonder if, not that the scripture is an intellectual in and of itself, but I wondered, you know, did you read beyond that in terms of intellectual grounding of the Christian worldview or to, you know, to support maybe that what you're reading in the Bible is actually true and reliable text? And did you wrestle with any of those issues?
Oh, very much. The entire process was a wrestling match. And this pastor psychologist who counseled me, one of the things that he said to me that was the most powerful that has always stuck with me is he said, faith requires doubt. Faith is not the absence of doubt. Faith is not 100% certainty. If it was, it wouldn't be faith. Of course you doubt. You will continue to doubt. You doubt and you take a leap of faith anyway. And that was a real revelation to me, like, because I always wanted to have 100% certainty, and that's just not available in human existence. You'll just never, even in atheism. Sorry, I would never have admitted when I was an atheist that atheism is a stance of faith. It is a belief system. You know, you believe that there's nothing. You believe that life is meaningless. But that's the case, you know. And so at the time, I really struggled. I read Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, which was also incredibly enriching, you know, because C.S. Lewis had been an atheist, because C.S. Lewis was such an intellectual and so well read. I mean, he spoke to me very, very deeply. He got me, right? He understood me. He knew that God had to prove himself intellectually to me, and he did. I was very lucky in that my initial exposure to Christianity, having been a former atheist, was, you know, C.S. Lewis, Timothy Keller. Max McLean had recommended to me Tim Keller sermons, and I think I consumed nearly and have consumed nearly every single Tim Keller sermon that exists in the world on the internet. I find him incredibly intellectual. I never knew that a pastor could talk like that. As a former atheist, I thought that Christians were either sort of what I call like a used car salesman, where they have like a really cheesy smile and they're like, praise Jesus, you know, or like a very somber Catholic pageantry mass, you know, neither of which appealed to me as an intellectual atheist. Then I find these sermons and I think, this man talks like a college professor. you know, this is like meeting me intellectually where I need to be met. And so, you know, our God is so amazing. He can meet anybody where they need to be met. For some people, it is a very spiritual experience. It's like that white light experience, you know, and for other people like me, it's a methodical, intellectual breaking down of ideas, reformatting my mind and my thinking. And that is what God did with me.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, you've spoken about kind of your journey, where you came from, and that you found yourself saying that you believed you were a Christian. Talk with me about how your life has changed since you became a Christian, and what of that question of meaning and void in your life, how has that, has it changed at all? Has God met you there?
Yes, 100% my life has changed. Now, that does not mean that my life does not have struggle. That doesn't mean there are things that are hard or challenging or difficult. I still cry. I still have, you know, anxiety. I still have stress. But it's not like it was before. It is not this meaningless, hopeless, debilitating depression. I now am married to a Christian man. We both love Jesus more than each other. Jesus comes first before anything else, comes before my marriage, comes before my children, comes before my career, my success, money in the bank, how I look, whatever. Because I know that ultimately all of those things will fail me. Even my husband will fail me. My kids will fail me. You know, my body and my health is eventually going to fail me. Everything is going to fail me. The only thing that is not is God. And realizing that I don't have to strive and strain and struggle, that it's not all up to me, which it always used to feel like it was. It's up to me to find the thing to make myself happy and to give myself meaning. And now it's like I can let go and just let God take over. And we've been very, very blessed in our Christian life together, my husband and I. We've had struggles. We've had very painful, you know, losses in our family. We've had tragedies. We've had things that we've had to deal with. But we also know that this world is not the end all be all. This is not the ultimate. You know, there's something greater. For now, we're here and it matters and it's important, but it's all going to fade away eventually. You know, it's all going to fade away eventually. And so we get to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, knowing that that is our ultimate hope and that is our ultimate meaning. And it has definitely, definitely served me well.
Well, anyone who's listening can see the obvious or hear the obvious change in you, that it is night and day from where you used to be. As we're kind of turning the corner here, you have a voice of wisdom because you understand what it means to think and live as an atheist for a long time and in a very deep way. I guess you could say you lived it out to its fullness. But you also found Christ. And I think one thing that's really beautiful about your story is your willingness to seek. You know, that you were not just a seeker, but you wanted to find.
Yeah.
And you did. You found. So if you were speaking to someone, a curious skeptic who's listening in today, how would you speak to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. For anybody who's struggling out there, I would just say that it's never too late. It's never too late and you are never too far gone. There is truly always hope. I know for me, it was very, very hard to believe that there was hope. It was very hard to believe that there was any way out of the dark that I was experiencing. And it really felt like it was going to kill me. It really felt like the darkness and the depression was going to destroy me. And for somebody who's in that place, I would say it won't. It may feel like you're going to die, but it cannot take you unless you let it. And I've heard so many stories from people who were at the very, very, very end of their rope and said, well, I might as well try this Jesus thing. And then if it doesn't work, I'll kill myself anyway. You know, and like that was their coming to faith moment. And I would just encourage someone that if you're in pain, to try something different. You know, it's like if you're so far gone, if you're so desperate, if it's so bad, you might as well try something different and just give it a chance. That is what I did. And I couldn't do it myself. I was powerless, but God is not powerless. He can do it. And so I let him. I let him take over. And I have been following him ever since. And I would just encourage anyone to, you know, honestly and earnestly look into it and give it a try.
Or just like you did, just that honest prayer. I love yes. I love that honest prayer. I don't believe you're out there, but if you are, you know, right. and it looked like the Lord really answered your prayer. Like you said,
yeah, you come to him as you are, you know, you don't have to get good or get clean, or you just come to him exactly as you are, wounds and all. You are totally accepted. You come to him with your doubts. You come to him with your skepticism. You can curse him out right to his face if you want to. Don't worry, he can take it. He is God. You know, I used to have this note that I had on my mirror that I would look at every single morning when I was early in my spiritual journey. And I loved it so much. And it said, "Good morning. This is God. I will be handling all of your problems today. I will not need any of your help. So have a nice day."
Oh, that's terrific. So turning the corner then, now as a Christian, you see things freshly with new eyes. And I'm sure thinking back to the man who came up to you, to the table, you know, and he approached you saying, you know, Jesus loves you. And it was so off-putting to you. I wonder, as a Christian now, how would you advise us as Christians in terms of engaging with those who don't believe? Maybe not like that, but maybe it sounds like he was a little bit of a touch point, even though at the time, you know, it wasn't what you wanted or expected.
Yeah, I mean, when I share my story, not just, you know, with you here, but just, you know, with friends and family. Because I come from a family where I am the only Christian, you know, nobody in my family believes. And when I talk about it, I don't try to convince anyone. I don't try to argue or anything. Really, I think the most effective thing I can do is speak from my own personal experience and share my story. You know, I know that it's true, that it is objectively true. It's not just subjectively true. It's not just my truth. I know that it's true. But I also know that you do have to approach people with a certain, you know, stance and a certain posture, and coming at them saying, this is true and you should believe this, you know, may turn some people off. So, you know, when I talk to people, it is my truth and it is my experience. And I gladly and willingly and openly share it with people. And I think just going back to, you know, we were talking earlier about the Stories of Us episodes at PragerU. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they're so effective, is because they really are people's personal stories of transformation, where they get to just speak authentically. And, you know, it's a way to not only change minds, but to change hearts too. And I really pray that my story would change some hearts and minds and maybe bring even just one person closer to God.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, like you say, it's like someone may not be convinced by a story, but it might open the door for them to seek for themselves. And we can hope for that, right?
Yeah.
What a beautiful story, Adrienne. What a beautiful life you've lived. It's been tragic, but beautiful. I mean, when you think of the word redemption and a redeemed life, I that's what comes to mind when you tell your story, that you moved from kind of a darkness to light and from a fragmented brokenness to such wholeness. Now, not perfect, you know, like you say, none of us are perfect, but it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. So thank you Anything you want to add?
I was just going to say, thank you so much. And, you know, even though I did a lot of work, I really don't take credit for this change. It really wasn't me. The only thing that I did was that I became willing. You know, I became willing to make different choices. But God is the one who did the change. You know, Jesus is the one who did the change in me. That was all Him. That was all His doing. And He is the reason for my life now. That is why anything good I have is because of Him. And I just want to encourage, you know, everybody out there to go watch this story. If you just go to PragerU.com, you can watch my Stories of Us episode. And I'm just so grateful to get to share this story and hope that it affects some people.
Yes, yes. Praise God that you were willing.
Yes.
Because, yeah, what the result is glorious, really amazing.
And thank you so, so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you for coming on. Thanks for tuning in to Side B Stories to hear Adrienne's story today. You can find out more about her by visiting our episode notes. For questions and feedback about this episode, you can contact me at the Side B Stories website. Again, that is www.sidebstories.com. If you enjoyed it, subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and social network. We would really appreciate it. In the meantime, I'll be looking forward to seeing you next time, where we'll see how someone else, another skeptic, flips the record of their life.